From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 7th day of April 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. Matt Blaisdell should be here. In the second half hour of our program on some of these radio stations and, of course, online at willag.org, we'll talk with U of I Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger about wet soils and the beginning of the growing season. In today's agricultural news, high-frequency transactions made on commodity exchanges may be tracked more fully by the U.S. government. The president of the U.S. Grains Council expects exports of DDGs to double in the next 5 years. And the Secretary of Agriculture is downplaying the potential of the Japanese market opening to U.S. beef imports. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, and it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day up like this. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat may count futures at 463, or rather 459 and a half. Oh, hang on just a moment. I got the wrong set of numbers up. And if we can find those, hope they didn't come up. Here we are. May wheat, 475 and a quarter with a settlement price up 11 and three quarters. July at 4488 and three quarters, 11 and a half cents higher. September futures, 505 and a half, up 11 and a half. From the corn pit, nearby May contract at 356 and a half, a dime higher. July at 367 and three quarters, up 9 and three quarters. September at 377 and three quarters, 9 and a quarter higher. December corn, 388 and a quarter, up 8 and a half cents for the day. May soybeans, 952 and a half, up 8. July at 961 and a half, up 8. And November beans at 941 and a quarter, 9 and a half cents higher. May bean meal at 265.60, up 250. July at 264.60, up 230. May bean oil at 40.03, 26 higher. July at 40.50, up 26. April live cattle, 99.45, up 220 for the day. April feeders at 113 and a nickel, 85 cents higher. And April lean hogs at $77.17. They settled the afternoon on a Wednesday at 55 cents higher. You are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $85.85, up 99 cents. May ethanol at $1.55.6, 4 tenths of a cent higher. Natural gas at $4.02.7, down 6 9 tenths. The heating oil at 224 and 3 tenths, up 2 and 4 tenths, and that's the diesel, of course. The gold futures at $1,152.30, up $17.20. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 66 points higher, lower rather, at 10,903. And the U.S. dollar now at 81.44 is up 0.05. The CRB index at 277.59 is down 0.93. The Goldman Sachs at 543.22, down 3.98. Here's a quick look at the weather forecast for the afternoon, and it does include a severe thunderstorm warning. I don't have that in front of me at the moment, but I know it's for Macon County at this point. And the weather forecast for the afternoon and this evening says partly to mostly cloudy skies, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Some of those may be strong to severe, as they already are. Highs will range from 48 in far northern Illinois to 82 in southeastern Indiana. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies and Illinois showers diminishing during the evening. In Indiana, showers, a few thunderstorms, especially in northern and eastern sections. Lows will range from 32 in far northwestern Illinois to 54 in the far southern part of Indiana. And then tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, a bit cooler. Widely scattered showers possible, mainly in northeastern Illinois and northern Indiana. Highs tomorrow will range from 45 in northeastern Indiana to 60 in the southwestern part of Illinois. A storm system, of course, will bring showers and thunderstorms to Illinois and Indiana today. Some will linger right on through the evening and in tomorrow, mainly in the northern and eastern parts of Indiana. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with Drew Lerner.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to Illinois Public Media and the Closing Market Report. On the line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Wet weather, keeping farmers out of the field and watching the skies as some severe storms are rolling across our part of the world. Though in Chicago, things were a little brighter for the day. A lot of green on the screen.
Yeah. You know, I think the meteorologists that we have the most confidence in basically talk about warmer than normal conditions, and if it's a rain delay, it's in certain parts, but it's overall a pretty good forecast for the planting season in the Midwest. The big news was the noon hour rumors that there is a rumor that China is showing some interest in U.S. corn. It's based a little bit on their crop size of the year ago. The rumors consist of maybe 2 million tons of corn, somewhere in that 75 million bushel area. It does calculate that 2 and 2 is 4. It does pencil an export sale could come from the U.S. to China. We understand that the three countries that China can buy from is U.S., Thailand, and Peru. The feeling is that it's very unlikely that it has been approved by government sources that they would be allowed to buy that much corn at this time. But it does fare well that DDGs are a factor, corn gluten feed. Can go in there, and they probably will be aggressive buyers there. It's always interesting to see people argue about the size of their crop the previous year, but that even happens in the U.S. As well. I think the bottom line is that the market was fairly cheap. The market is looking at cheaper corn prices in South America, cheaper wheat prices around the world, and I guess what we should say is hopefully they'll buy some U.S. corn because we have a ton of it to sell.
Hey, I've got another question for you. You mentioned DDGs, and I know we'll hear in the newscast that there's an idea that exports of DDGs may double in the next 5 years. They're not tracked awfully well, should they be?
Oh, I'm going to say that flip of the coin. And the reason I say that is it's a product, and it 3 to 5 years ago, I know it, a lot of it did go to Europe, and I'm sure a lot of it's going. But the thing that we can say with a great deal of certainty is that there's going to be more available, and it's going to be a big market, and there are people that are gearing up. I think it's a case that if they need to, they can. It's probably pretty easy to keep track of. And I know the big grain companies are very, very efficient in moving it. They ship trains. They handle bulk commodities. It's as efficient as anything that any place in the world. And if there's a buyer overseas, they can come to the U.S. and get good service and high quality.
Any field work in your area done?
Yes, we've had some corn planted, and I think 3 or 4 cases in the county. We're seeing a lot of anhydrous go on. Our sources in Iowa say that a lot of field work, a lot of anhydrous, and the difference is that 200 bushel corn equates better than 50 bushel beans, and it's easier to grow 200 bushel corn than 52 to 55 bushel beans. And so the edge goes to corn. But I think we do have a lot of acres, and an early plant is what the doctors ordered.
On Friday, USDA will release its ending grain stocks reports. What do you think of it'll show?
there is talk that something like a 206 number in soybeans, Informa thinks 241. A year from now, there'll be 709 million bushels of bean carryover. I think there's a feeling of maybe a little over 100 million increase in corn. Informa thinks ultimately it's a 2,050 number, and a year from now it'll be 2,251. As those numbers indicate, we have a ton of corn to sell, and hopefully we can sell it to the Chinese.
Yeah, well, that keep hopefully you can sell it to Chinese. Of course, they'll have a crop in the ground and in the bin about the same time that we do in the spring and the fall.
We also note that there is a group in Congress that want their Chinese currency to be reevaluated higher. And as a result of that, it would take less currency for them to buy U.S. commodities. Now, that's an argument, but, you know, as far as a cheap dollar exporting a lot of extra demand, it takes time for that to work. The second argument is that some Chinese officials are coming, and, of course, a backdrop of exporting corn to China doesn't hurt at least 25 or 30 U.S. senators in the Midwest.
What did you see in the soybean market on the afternoon?
Well, I think the big thing in the soybean market is everybody is wanting to know why the soybeans are so strong. The Chinese farmer is a slow seller of soybeans. We understand the Chinese currency reevaluation is a factor, but at the main time, the market every once in a while has to fool the bear, and it followed along with the corn and wheat rally today.
And then if you take a look at a broad perspective for new crop sales on both corn and soybeans, would you be sellers on rallies like today?
Well, we, of course, are sold on $10 new crop beans already. We're a big advocate of day trading and trading the marketplace. As far as selling more here, we're already sold, and we don't believe in going out too far like next year. As far as corn is concerned, I think the new crop corn, riding out of the money calls, trying to trade the market is the way to go. I'm not a real big player wanting to sell new crop corn here at this time.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Have a profitable day.
You too. Thanks much. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Leonard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We have added an additional half hour to this program we call the second half hour, The Farming World. It shows up on some of these radio stations, if not on yours. You can always listen to it online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our guest today will be University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger. We'll talk about the wet beginning to the growing season and all of those pesky things that happened last fall to the soils, like, well, compaction and ruts, and what producers might be able to do about it. Dave Dickey is here now. He's the Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media, and will take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, a U.S. securities regulator may formulate a plan to improve oversight of high-frequency trading by keeping track of executed transactions. Under the new plan, the Securities and Exchange Commission would give the trading firms unique identifiers, which would tag every high-frequency transaction. Those identifiers would also allow the SEC to keep track of traders who are not registered market makers or broker-dealers. The tagged trading data released a day after transactions were executed would be available only to regulators. High-frequency trading is where banks, hedge funds, and proprietary firms use algorithms to make markets and earn thin profits from tiny market imbalances. It is estimated to account for some 40% of all U.S. futures trading. U.S. Grains Council President Thomas Doerr says the U.S. plans to double overseas sales of DDGs in the next 5 years as demand from animal feed makers in China expands. Doerr says that DDGs, a high-nutrient feed used in the livestock industry, may jump to as much as 11 million metric tons a year from 5 million tons now. Researchers in China say that feed mills in the PRC, the world's biggest pork producer, are seeking cheaper alternatives to locally grown corn as consumption of meat, milk, and eggs booms in the world's fastest-growing major economy. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack today sought to downplay the probability of Japan agreeing to fully reopening its market to U.S. beef during his visit to Tokyo this week. Asked if he expected any deal to be agreed on during his visit, Vilsack said it was important to continue dialogue and build on the bilateral relationship. He denied that there was any U.S. political pressure on Japan. Vilsack is in Japan to promote farm exports from the United States. The U.S. is the biggest exporter of agricultural products to Japan, accounting for nearly one-third of Japan's agricultural imports. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is aiming to publish by the end of April its tailoring rule outlining which power plants and other sources of greenhouse gas emissions will be regulated. But Assistant Administrator Regina McCarthy added that it may be pushed into May given the complexity of the rule. Industry officials say uncertainty and concerns about the new regulations, how stringent or flexible they will be, are curbing energy development and clouding future investments in emitting sectors. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. By the way, that's the title of the second half hour of this program, The Farming World. Our guest today will be Emerson Napsiger, Extension Agronomist. He'll take a complete look at what's happening out in the countryside at this point and how the wet soils will hamper the start to the growing season. Now up next, USDA's quarterly grain stocks report showed more grain and oil seeds on hand than the trade had really expected. It reacted, of course, by driving the price of corn and soybeans down. And while the overall direction of that move might be correct in the long run, as you'll hear, ag economist at the University of Illinois, Daryl Good, thinks the trade misinterpreted the report. We'll know more about that tomorrow morning when the ending stocks numbers are updated. Here's what Daryl has to say.
Oops, actually, you know that's not tomorrow morning. That's Friday morning, and you can get them in your computer and on your phone by subscribing to our newsletter at willag.org. Just hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page.
USDA's grain stocks reports are supposed to accurately assess how much of a commodity is still available for use. The last one, released March 31st, showed more corn and soybeans on hand than the trade had expected. The price of both commodities dropped, but was it the right reaction to the report? Maybe not, says University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good.
I think there's some chance the market is misinterpreting, particularly the soybean number. The number did come in 50, 60, 70 million bushels above expectations, but not because the crop was larger or that we used fewer soybeans than anticipated. It's really all in the residual disappearance of soybeans and how that fell out on a quarterly basis. We did see in the first quarter of the year an extremely large and unexplained residual use of soybeans. They weren't crushed, they weren't exported, but they disappeared. That was double what we would normally see during that quarter. And we knew that unless the crop was misestimated, that at some point we would see a negative number in the residual category. Typically, that all gets corrected in the fourth quarter of the year. But what we did see this year is a negative residual disappearance during the second quarter that now makes the first half residual use of soybeans look normal.
And consequently, that means the grain stocks report does not change the ending stocks number. It's the projection of what will be left over from this year when next year's harvest starts to come in. Most in the trade upped that number in their minds when the quarterly grain stocks report was released.
That larger stocks didn't mean we're crushing fewer or exporting fewer soybeans than the market thought. It's just the quarterly rate of residual disappearance that's a little odd this year compared to a normal year. So a very large negative reaction. I think it's really not warranted by the stocks number. It may be a price decline that was coming anyhow because of the large South American crop, and I don't think we've fully reflected the implications of that. So I'm convinced lower soybean prices were on the horizon before this report, but I don't think this report in itself justifies a sharp sell-off in soybeans. It may be just accelerating an inevitable pattern that we were going to see anyhow, but it is a surprising reaction.
You can read more from University of Illinois Ag Economist Darrell Good online at www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural cash grains markets. And Matt Blaisdell is with us today. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
He's at the Anderson's Delphi facility. Good. And I want to know from you whether producers in the area have been moving very much, whether that be grain into you or whether in the field.
You know, we have been actually in the fields here. Had a couple guys that even started putting seed in the ground as early as either last Friday or maybe even this weekend. Some guys have some size on them, even have some a couple thousand acres in the ground. You know, we've seen a pretty distinct shutoff of the trucks here maybe a week to 10 days ago, and about the same time, of course, you know, guys starting to focus on putting gas on or even getting corn planted.
And they're not too worried about soils being fairly wet, and maybe they're not underneath that wet at this point.
No, they're not. I think some of it's also psychological. We still have last year in the back of our mind, and the mentality of this year is we just want to get in the ground and get in the ground quickly.
And what are your bids at this time?
Yeah, right now, base is up a little bit here. So cash corn at Climbers, 349, Delphi beans, 942.
Tighter basis just on the idea that producers are in the field and not going to be hauling?
Exactly here. April, May at the processor here is probably up a nickel already this week at the corn processor. So just everybody's starting to see flows really shut down here.
Matt, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Matt Blaisdell is with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Wednesday afternoon. When we return, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, Missouri.
National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for north central Christian County as well as Macon County in central Illinois until 2:45 this afternoon. In addition, the National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch in effect until 7 o'clock central time this evening for the following counties in the Illinois Public Media Severe Weather Coverage Area. In central Illinois, Christian, Macon, Piatt, DeWitt, McLean, Sagamon, Logan, Moultrie, Shelby, and Livingston. In East Central Illinois, Champaign, Crawford, Edgar, Clark, Cumberland, Vermilion, Coles, Douglas, Ford, and Iroquois counties. In addition to counties within the Illinois Public Media severe weather coverage area, the tornado watch also includes in south central Illinois, Clay and Effingham counties, and in southeastern Illinois, Jasper, Lawrence, and Richland counties. This includes the cities of Bloomington, Champaign, Charleston, Danville, Decatur, Effingham, Flora, Lawrenceville, Lincoln, Mattoon, Normal, Shelbyville, Springfield, Taylorville, and Urbana. Once again, the National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch in effect until 7 o'clock this evening for counties in central Illinois, east central Illinois, south central Illinois, and in southeastern Illinois. In addition, the National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a severe thunderstorm warning, this just in, for northern McLean County in central Illinois, that until 3 o'clock this afternoon. That's northern McLean County in central Illinois until 3 o'clock this afternoon.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here to take a look at the weather forecast. He's an agricultural meteorologist from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Weather in the Midwest, a bit rocky for the afternoon. Lots of rainfall in parts of our world. I wonder how much rainfall you think producers will get and how widespread it will be.
Well, I think the majority of the rain is going to be light, but there are, of course, some very strong thunderstorms that will be occurring, and that will likely set off the potential for some half-inch to one-inch totals. At this point, though, I don't think there's going to be widespread, except possibly along a band that will probably come out of the northern parts of the Delta into southern portions of Indiana, where we could end up with some half-inch to one-inch totals in a general sense along a line of storms is likely to move through that region. And outside of that, I think the rainfall will probably run from a few hundredths of an inch up to about 5 or 6 tenths of an inch most often. So not a large volume of rainfall here. Now, I should also point out there'll be a few other areas in the Midwest that may also get a little bit better rainfall. And those will be random, but it looks like maybe a few spots in Ohio tonight into tomorrow will also get some strong and locally heavy thunderstorms in that region as well. But in general, this precipitation event is not what we would call a generalized event, and there will be areas out there that don't get a great deal of moisture.
How soon will we begin to dry out?
Well, it looks like as we go through the afternoon tomorrow, we'll see a considerable amount of sunshine returning to the western portions of the Midwest, and specifically we're talking about the heart of the Mississippi River Basin here, actually. And those areas will start drying out, and the easternmost sections of the region will see the same thing occur by Friday morning. There will not be any other precipitation of significance across the region for a while. The next opportunity for any meaningful precipitation will probably be in the Great Lakes region, primarily Michigan, as we get out to Sunday, late Saturday night or Sunday morning, and then we'll have to wait until sometime towards the latter part of next week for the next bigger rain event to come along, and that means we'll have a good opportunity for field work to take place across a large part of the Midwest and actually for the Delta in the southeastern states as well.
How is the western part of the United States faring for the winter wheat as it comes out of dormancy?
That winter wheat crop has really been stimulated into some rapid crop development here recently, and the crop growth rates are now to the point where we are moving along a little bit faster than usual at this point. But up until last Sunday, most areas in Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas were still reporting wheat development just a little bit behind last year's pace. With that said, talked to some farmers earlier today about the crop in Texas Panhandle areas already in the boot and head stage in some locations. And we do have freezing temperatures coming up overnight tonight. Extreme lows in the middle and upper 20s will occur as far south as the Texas Panhandle. I think there could be a little bit of damage out there, but it is not going to be a widespread significant event that will have a major impact on production.
We appreciate you taking the time with us for the day.
Thank you, Todd, and have a good afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on this Wednesday afternoon. For some of our radio stations, we'll continue now with the farming world. Our guest will be Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist from the University of Illinois. For the rest of you, we say so long, and you have a great day.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you. Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Farming World, news and interviews from the land grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today, we'll talk with Emerson Nafziger. He's the Extension agronomist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Tillage, not much done last fall. It was wet and farmers are worried. What are your suggestions?
Most of the people that are going with corn after corn certainly feel that tilling in the fall, usually with a chisel plow or a combination disc ripper of some sort, is a critical part of that operation. Clearly, a lot of people did not get that done last fall. It was both too wet and at the time of harvest, and it stayed wet, and then it got cold, and before we knew it was impossible to do any tillage, and so we simply are coming into the spring here without very much, if anything, done in most of these fields. We're not so concerned about the nitrogen application part of it because we had that the year before and didn't get a lot on, especially in corn after corn. But the fact that we did a lot of compaction last year, both at the planting operation and at harvest time, had a lot of people thinking that we had to fix the compaction problem by doing some sort of deep tillage. In fact, deep tillage is the only way that you can have much effect on soils that are compacted to a depth of 12 to 15 inches, which is certainly typical with today's heavy equipment. But in order to do that, you have to run the tillage equipment to the depth that the compaction occurs. And so there's a high probability that we won't get the chance this spring to do tillage to a depth that would affect the compaction very much. And although we really don't like to do that, we're going to head into the 2010 crop season, I think even after planting, without really having solved the compaction problem. Compaction to depth of 10 or 12 inches is not affected very much by freezing and thawing. At the most this year, it froze once and thawed once. And a lot of people in the northern part of the state up into Wisconsin that had snow most of the winter, it never really froze to depth very much at all. We can worry about it, but I think it's a mistake to try to figure that if we just wait long enough until we can drive on the fields and not make too big a tracks, that we can pull that chisel or ripper to a 12-inch depth and sort of fix the compaction problem. And so I guess without dwelling on it too much, we'd simply have to say that we're going to live with compaction again this year. And we're certainly hoping that the weather is kind to us and allows the crop to do well even with compaction. Certainly in 2009, the crop did well, and there was a lot of compaction the way we put this crop in last spring.
Still, there are a whole lot, and I've seen what you've written about this, of corn stalks out there that are in really good shape, didn't break down very much, and they're going to create a serious problem for a lot of producers.
When we talk about stalk breakdown, for most people, that just means they kind of fall apart a little easier. They're not a broomstick anymore, is what I like to call the stalks that are the problem. And they don't physically, or they don't lose a lot of dry matter. You know, they aren't badly deteriorating over the winter most of the time anyway. But what we depend on is that the microbes that break them down and sort of get in there and start their work in the fall and have some temperature and moisture to do that. And then they'll do some more in the spring after it starts to warm up. Breakdown of stalks is a biological process, so there's not a lot we can do to speed it up if we don't have the temperatures to do that. But we can physically
size the stalks as well, which can help us mechanically when it comes to planting. And that's probably about all we can do this spring, is try to physically break them into pieces so that we can push them aside with in our planting operation, so they're not, so we're not trying to plant directly across these corn stalks that are in the soil. And it's not easy to do that even, especially when they're in good shape like they are now. And a lot of people are simply going to have to experiment with things to see if they can get that job done.
Yeah, so what kind of tools might they have on the farm already? Because they're probably not going to run out and buy a new tool to do this. But let's start with the tools they might have on the farm. I suppose they'd have a disc. They'd have a field cultivator. They might actually have a chopper. I don't know. On some place, some farms. What kinds of things do you think would work? And what are they going to look for to know that it did work?
Well, first of all, the fact that the stalks are there is going to slow the drying rate, and so it's going to be a test of our patience until we can get in and do anything. The soils are clearly wet. Driving across them is, you know, except for the fact that we packed them at planting and packed them again at harvest last year, which might make it a little easier to drive across them, but it's not going to be a pleasant thing to sit and wait until these are dry enough. Chopping the stalks in the spring is something we don't normally think about. I suppose the efficient thing to do would be to take something like a disc. There may be some disc rippers or soil finishers now, in fact, that can do the job that we would have done with a disc at one time. The problem with most of the finishers is that they have a set of shanks of some sort, and a lot of times they're spaced more like field cultivator shanks. And that means they're going to have the same problem that a field cultivator would have, and that is it's going to rake up this residue. And there's not just a whole lot you can do to make that, to avoid that problem. And a field cultivator, I think, pulled out into a field of corn stalks is going to kind of act like a buck rake, and we'll be stopping every 30 feet to lift up and leave big clumps of corn stalks, which is just a sort of a disaster.
So would you take the shanks off the soil finisher, which probably isn't all that wide, but then run really fast with it because it's a heavy piece of equipment?
Well, running fast with a heavy piece of equipment doesn't help very much. But the soil finishers wouldn't be as heavy as the primary tillage tools or the disc ripper combinations. And if you take some of the shanks off, let's say you took off, left one row on, or maybe even took them all off, so that because they would be doing little more than sort of raking things up. So set your front disc gangs to an angle that will do a decent job of chopping up the stalks and disturbing the soil, and then having the leveler come along behind might be a reasonable way to start this. None of this is going to be easy, and the fact is we had a pretty good crop and we've got a lot of residue. It's hard to manage a lot of residue without a tillage operation like chiseling that'll actually bury some of it. Springtime moldboard plowing, you know, would have been the traditional way we would have dealt with this. Not really a very good option for very many people, partly because of the fact that it's going to be wet and not fit to plow these things very early. The regular sort of offset or finishing disc, I guess we should say, might be a reasonable tool to use. I know that, you know, a lot of people have retired their disc. A lot of people have gotten rid of their disc. But I expect that in terms of doing what we need to do, break up the residue some, incorporate some of it, give us a place where we can bring a planter out and do a good job of seed placement, it might be about as good a tool as any when we have these unusual conditions that we have this spring.
All right, so the keys are you're gonna have to be patient, really patient, especially if we have a fairly early spring. They're going to want to try to get out there early, but you've got to get out first, cut that stalk up in some form and then be patient enough to put the crop in after that?
Well, we'd like to have easy answers, but yes, patience is going to be the big issue, and experimenting with something that gets done what we need to get done. We have basically one goal this spring, and that is to make a good seed bed. As we talked about, we're not going to be able to really solve, you know, what's happened in the soil in the 12 inches deep over the last year. We're just going to have to live with that. But the primary thing we need to worry about is getting a good stand, and we need to do whatever we need to do to make that happen. One of the possibilities that some people have considered that are doing strip-till, because they didn't get strip-till done last fall, might be to do strip-till in the spring. We've done a little comparison of that, and we find that that typically works about as well as making strips in the fall. And it might be a possibility for some people going out into corn stalks and going down between the rows to do strips in the spring. And I would suggest that people might want to take the knife off and not really try to do any tillage with this, but just sort of push the trash out of the way and maybe do a little shallow tillage with the closers. One of the problems that is present in lots of fields this year is ruts that we made last fall during harvest. You obviously can't strip till in a rut. You can't do much of anything in a rut. And the reason to use something like a soil finisher or a finishing disc would be to try to fill in the ruts. And there's nothing subtle about ruts and needing to fill them in. We simply have to do whatever it takes to get those filled in. Unfortunately, they run down between the rows, so they're not going to be, you can't go strip till and then put your hope that you can plant into that if you have ruts that were left last fall. And I've been in the air a few times, and I've seen lots of fields have ruts in some places in the field. And so this is going to be another big challenge with some people this year, that these fields are not very level, and we certainly need to have them to get a uniform seedbed condition. We're simply going to have to fill those ruts in.
Yeah, and that's a separate issue from the corn stalks and trying to do tillage where you need patience. With the ruts, you want them just to get out and take care of that, right?
Well, we're going to have to take care of the ruts. Again, the ruts are going to be there. Obviously, it's wet where those ruts are formed. They wouldn't have formed as much otherwise. There's probably water standing in many of them. And so that, again, is going to be an exercise in patience. But we simply have to get that job done. One of the pieces of equipment that some people have talked about, and I heard a few people say they used it successfully last year, is the so-called vertical tillage or the fast light tillage. That's kind of the non-disc, I guess.
That's Emerson Nafziger. He's an extension agronomist at the University of Illinois. We'll return and talk more with him in just a couple of minutes here. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is The Farming World. We're in Urbana-Champaign at the University of Illinois. My name, of course, is Todd Gleason, and you can always hear us online if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org.
The National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for north central Christian County as well as Macon County in central Illinois until 2:45 this afternoon. In addition, the National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch in effect until 7 o'clock Central Time this evening for the following counties in the Illinois Public Media Severe Weather Coverage Area. In central Illinois, Christian, Macon, Piatt, DeWitt, McLean, Sangamon, Logan, Moultrie, Shelby, and Livingston. In east central Illinois, Champaign, Crawford, Edgar, Clark, Cumberland, Vermilion, Coles, Douglas, Ford, and Iroquois counties. In addition to counties within the Illinois Public Media Severe Weather Coverage Area, The tornado watch also includes in south central Illinois, Clay and Effingham counties, and in southeastern Illinois, Jasper, Lawrence, and Richland counties. This includes the cities of Bloomington, Champaign, Charleston, Danville, Decatur, Effingham, Flora, Lawrenceville, Lincoln, Mattoon, Normal, Shelbyville, Springfield, Taylorville, and Urbana. Once again, the National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch in effect until 7 o'clock this evening for counties in central Illinois, east central Illinois, south central Illinois, and in southeastern Illinois. And the National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for northern McLean County until 3 o'clock, as well as severe thunderstorm warnings for southwestern Champaign County, northeastern McLean County, central Piatt County, northwestern Ford County, southwestern Grundy, northwestern Iroquois, and southeastern LaSalle and Livingston County until 3:30.
Strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're talking today with Emerson Knapsiger, Extension agronomist from the University of Illinois.
There's much talk, and I know that seed dealers are being asked about purchasing and planting shorter season corn, and that is purely a marketing issue, so we'll probably need to take some of the marketing side of it up with other folks. They're trying to pick up a premium potentially for quick ship in the very early fall. From your point of view, what are the pitfalls of putting a short season corn in early in the season?
One of the big problems this year is that everybody in the northern corn belt that got burned last year by having a 110-day hybrid when they should have had a 102-day hybrid, the way the season went, you know, that got frosted before it was done only because it was later, too late for the conditions, is going to look for those earlier season hybrids this year. And I suspect that the early season hybrids are going to be in short supply. So if you can get a good, we'll say, a good proven short season hybrid, and that's sometimes a little bit of an oxymoron, because if it's a 98-day hybrid, it hasn't been tested much in this part of the country, in central Illinois. But I would never overdo it by saying, well, no matter what, I'm not going to plant that 110-day hybrid that I've been planting up to last year when I found that it was really later than it should have been. Understand that both our late planting and the unusually cool weather last year was a combination that we really haven't seen before. It's always dangerous to say this, but the chances of such an unusual combination happening again are pretty rare. If I needed to get an early harvest, early market, and was able to get in early, then certainly I would like a 105-day hybrid if that will allow me to do that. We certainly know that you can't guarantee an early harvest almost no matter what you do, and even the early planted corn last year didn't get harvested early. So there's always that part of it. We always give sort of the standard warning about taking hybrids that even your dealer isn't too sure about, just because they're early in maturity, can certainly end up costing you more than you saved or thought you were going to save. Planting in these conditions, if in fact we plant under less than ideal conditions this year with residue issues and colder soil, wetter soils, compaction underneath, I don't think there's too much we can do in terms of hybrid selection that's going to help us to overcome those. And we basically just fall back on the idea that we want to plant the best hybrids we've been able to find and hope that our weather comes along and that they'll do well.
Finally, Emerson, do you have words of wisdom for producers about anhydrous ammonia or nitrogen applications?
If it's going to stay wet underneath, and I think that's a fairly safe bet, this year, that might not be a good condition to try to put anhydrous on, you know, and then plant a week or 2 weeks later. When you put anhydrous into wet soils, it doesn't spread very far. It remains more concentrated in the soil, and that means if it does dry out after that, it can actually come out of solution and move back up and do damage to roots. It would be much safer to have anhydrous between the rows than it would to have under the rows, and that includes running on a diagonal or something like that. For a lot of people, given the conditions we have this year, planting first and putting nitrogen on after we plant might be the best option, although we always worry about everybody trying to do that. For some people, you know, things like UAN or urea are probably safer from that standpoint, from the crop standpoint. We worry about loss of the farms that have urea in them if they're just put on the surface, and we worry about loss of things with nitrate in them, like UAN, because it will move with water as soon as it's applied. So there's not a perfect solution here, but I think just use our common sense and use these few operating principles to get our nitrogen on. And, you know, getting the crop planted under good conditions probably needs to have a higher priority. If it's too wet to plant, it's probably too wet to put anhydrous on for sure, and it may be too wet to put nitrogen on at all. One of the things we worry about with, say, a urea application or even UAN is that if it's put onto wet soils and then those soils dry out and doesn't rain for several weeks, we can lose a substantial amount of the urea. We can use some urease inhibitors, agrotain, for example. It adds some expense, but it may not be a bad option if we really have to go on, say, after planting and put all of our UAN on as a surface application. Putting it on to fields that have a lot of residue on top is always an issue. They have more of the urease, so it's more subject to loss when we're doing that.
Thanks, Emerson. Emerson Napsiger is an extension agronomist at the University of Illinois. If you'd like to learn more from him, you can always visit the bulletin website at ipm.illinois.edu. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason for the Farming World. You have a good afternoon.